Chapter 12 of Death of an Airman by Christopher St. John Sprigg. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. Chapter 12. Inevitability of Self-Murder. Inspector Creighton looked at Dr. Marriott with an air of stupefaction on his honest face, which the ecclesiastic thought almost too good to be true.
"My lord, you amaze me. Really you do. You seem to know more about this business than I do."
The Bishop of Cootamundra endeavoured to look modest.
"Ah, has my little suggestion proved fortunate? That interests me. What is the result?"
Inspector Creighton opened a drawer in his desk and pulled out a folder.
"Bastable agreed to consult with the Home Office expert," he explained. "I raised some small point as an excuse, so as not to hurt his feelings, a query about the force of impact of the wound. Then I dropped a quiet word to the Home Office man. He spotted something at once." Creighton looked at the bishop impressively.
"The revolver wound was made before the blow on the head was received."
The bishop nodded. "The possibility had occurred to me some time ago, and that was why I raised the point. It is the only hypothesis that makes sense, after all."
"I'm glad it makes sense to you," exclaimed the detective. "I'm blessed if it does to me. For the Home Office fellow swears that it was the revolver bullet that killed Furness, so that he must have been shot dead just before he hit the ground. No wonder he went such a bump against the cockpit dashboard. He would have been as limp as a sack. He must have been shot dead in the air. But how?"
"Not very difficult, surely," ventured the bishop.
"Not difficult? With him alone in the air, and not another aeroplane near? Why, it seems to me impossible."
"Only too possible," said the bishop with a quiet smile. "I fear you have the whole story now, Inspector. You remember the letter Furness wrote to Lady Laura?"
"I do, and very misleading it was, too."
"On the contrary, it was the simple truth," answered Dr. Marriott gravely. "Furness, poor fellow, did kill himself. He shot himself in the air. A touch of imagination, that, which one must admire, although one reprehends the essential cowardice of the act. It was a suicide which was the airman's equivalent of the Viking's funeral. Death in a crashing plane. He shot himself in the head and fell back, pulling the stick back with him. The machine stalled and then span. In the spin, the revolver doubtless fell out of the machine. If you make a search of the fields, you'll probably find it."
"I did find it, fallen in the middle of the aerodrome," admitted the inspector.
"You see," said the other triumphantly, "additional proof. Well, he span into the ground, dead, and his forehead struck the dashboard, accidentally obliterating the original wound."
"Then there was no murder?" said Creighton, with an air of disappointment.
"No, I'm glad to say," replied the bishop. "None. Have you the Home Office expert's estimate as to the time between the bullet wound and the dashboard wound?"
"Yes, here we are." Creighton picked up a few folio sheets of neat typescript. "He says one must have followed within about 2 minutes of the other, perhaps less. The blood had no time to coagulate before the head struck the dashboard. That, of course, is what led Bastable wrong, to give him his due. The Home Office man said that only microscopical examination of the tissues revealed what had happened, and any doctor would have made Bastable's mistake. But, of course, these doctors hang together so much anyway, and he may just have been saving Bastable's face. Bastable more or less admitted that he'd made a very hurried examination of the body, as the whole thing seemed so obvious."
"Well, at any rate, that is final," remarked the bishop. "We were watching the machine, and we should certainly have seen if anyone was flying near enough to shoot him just before the crash."
"Certainly, my lord. But if you'll excuse me, aren't you leaving some loose ends? I mean, I shan't feel happy in my mind unless I clear up the matter of that extra money made by Furness, for instance, and that cocaine."
"I refuse to regard those loose ends as important, Inspector," said Dr. Marriott firmly. Still, how does this do? Furness is making money for certain services rendered. He knows them to be illegal, and consequently he gets heavily paid for them. But he does not know what their illegality consists in. However, just before his death he becomes suspicious, and, after investigation, finds they are connected with the drug traffic. Now, lots of quite decent men think it perfectly legitimate to do illegal things, to cheat the revenue, for instance. I can't feel very indignant about it myself when I get my income tax assessment, but there is something abhorrent about the drug traffic, with its trade in demoralizing human souls and drawing them into a slough of degeneracy. A decent man, such as I think Furness to have been, may well have been horrified to find that he had concerned himself in such a filthy business, but he may have thought himself too deeply involved to be able to get out of it, and so he killed himself. "Aye, that's about it," admitted the inspector, as he turned it slowly over in his mind. "It all fits in." He felt a little sorry that the fine case he was working on had turned out to be not much more than the verdict at the inquest stated it to be, but there would be satisfaction in presenting the chief constable with a solution in this tangled case that cleared up everything. Not everything, though, because there was still the matter of the cocaine that Furness had found. There were drugs at Beston, how or why he did not know, but it was a matter that had to be cleared up. If only his little trip to Glasgow with Bray had solved the mystery. "If there's nothing more, Inspector, I must be getting back." There was real misery in the bishop's voice as he added, "There's a meeting of the executive committee to the Beston flying display, to which I now belong." "I'm sorry to hear it, my lord," said the inspector simply, "but I saw it was bound to happen. I know Lady Crumbles." End of chapter 12.